Welcome to Seeing Into Being Summit, spiritual insights and stories to awaken the golden age in your heart, mind, and daily life.
Jim, hello, and Om Shanti, and very welcome to the program Seeing Into Being. Hope you're doing well. Welcome to this program.
Thank you so much. Be delighted and privileged to be on your wonderful station.
Well, we're looking forward very, very much to pick your brain, as we say, to check what's your golden age recording. Looking forward to see what's your journey in this adventure of, you know, moving towards a golden age at stage. And I know you've been with Baba for many, many years, and you must have had quite a few entertaining experiences about the future world. So we just wanted to start maybe with your personal experiences, you know, when you came into Gyan and the topic of Golden Age was presented to you. What was your reaction? What was your experience at the time? And how did you discover a little bit this notion of paradise or Golden Age, the way Baba was presenting it?
There was one wonderful experience I had. I wasn't so long in Gyan, and even the Golden Age was presented as a sort of almost an historical thing, and it was a kind of, I was a little bit outside it, and I liked the concept of it. But I wasn't so long in Gyan, and it was I was arriving in Madhuban as part of Dalai Kumarka's travelling group. You know, it was a wonderful, the weather was wonderful, it was a golden evening, it was a wonderful golden sunset, and we arrived at Madhuban, and it was an incredible experience. The residents were lined up in the courtyard, and they were all holding candles, like as a welcome. I was already, probably half drunk, I think, you know, intoxicated, traveling and communicating with Dalai Kumarka. You know, this incredible figure was with us for a long time on the journey from Delhi. And then coming upon this scene, it kind of blew my mind, actually. It was like entering another reality, some kind of mystical golden world. Everything was suffused in a sort of golden light, and everything just seemed to take on a very dreamlike quality. The Madhuban brothers became immense and radiant, and their eyes were full of love and spiritual beauty. And the courtyard is, which many people, as many people would know, is really quite small, but it seemed vast, it seemed immense. And as we entered, Dalai seemed to float and drift on a sort of curtain of energy. And she was acknowledging and blessing as she entered. She was like some resplendent magical fairy queen, like giving love and receiving love. It was an incredible experience, and this kind of experience carried on a bit later in a meeting that I had with her in her room. It was incredible to have this, when you look back on it, to have this one-to-one meeting with her. And it was like, again, it was like sitting before a queen of immense power and royalty and great beauty. And I don't know what was happening, to tell the truth. You know, we sat there for a while in silence, and her eyes seemed to say so much to me, filling my heart with immense power. And when she spoke, her words seemed to float around me, full of love and spiritual significance. I was in a complete daze of wonderment. It was a wonderful experience. And at the time, I thought, well, is this the Golden Age? This is what the Golden Age must be like. So it was a wonderful experience for me. I think that's probably my deepest or most profound insight into what the Golden Age possibly is like. It's like only when you reflect back on it, Eric, I think.
What do you think triggered really that state of awareness? Because maybe an outsider, someone would be walking past the street and watching the same scene, may not be having the same experience. So what do you think was really within you that aligned yourself to decode this whole scene into something divine, or like you said, mystical, or out of the ordinary? Was it like the vibrational level?
That's a very good question. I really don't know. It's maybe something there that it goes back to my early interest in mythology. Maybe it was something like that, you know, that somehow it triggered a sort of a resonance with my previous early interests. I don't know, it's a karma. I don't know. Maybe the journey up should have already taken us into a very subtle, very beautiful spiritual, subtle energy. And maybe that it was something that that triggered this experience. I don't really know. It's a very difficult question to say what brought that on.
Well, we know Dadiji had a unique magnitude, I think, to her energy and vibration and charisma. So I think maybe she was also carrying something that was already a reminiscence or a kind of frequency of the vibrations of Golden Age, maybe.
Yeah, I think very much so, because it was almost like, Eric, it was almost like she was like drawing her world to her, to herself. Maybe I was part of her world. I was part of that kingdom. I was part of that age. And it was kind of like bringing it together. She was like drawing us all together, saying, you know, you've returned. Welcome back. You know, the great ruler welcoming back her long-lost subjects that have wandered off into the wilderness.
How did you use this experience afterwards to put all the pieces together of the puzzle of what really is this Golden Age about? You heard all the Merlis from Baba about, you know, the description of the Golden Age in fairly clear details in terms of what we would do, what will happen, the court, the royalty. How did you put together all these pieces? What became Golden Age for you after that experience in the light of the Merlis Baba was giving?
I just took it. I was just in that kind of buzz. I was in that kind of space. And I didn't really try to process it, of course, at that time. I was just floating in that subtle energy. I think in later times, it's like you look, reflect back on it, and it was. I think maybe it was about, you know, you talked about the resonance that Daddy carried with her, and for me, maybe that she embodied, you know, what Satchuk or the prerequisites for Satchuk was that she carried the code of it, that within her spiritual DNA. There was this kind of, this is how we could access it. You know, that I felt my particular take on Daddy was that she was totally full of acceptance for each and every soul, you know, as a spiritually unique being, as a special child of the Father, you know, and there seemed to be with her an incredible regard and respect for all souls, whether it's junior or senior, young or old. There's incredible empathic embrace for all souls. And she seemed to be the embodiment, not seemed, she was, the embodiment of unlimited benevolence, not holding anything, just totally giving. You just felt that she was giving everything. She had nothing. And had done everything.
What is your experience, or what is your what comes to mind to you when we say Golden Age now, when been so many years after these experiences with Dadiji, when you hear the word Golden Age, or when Baba says you have to prepare yourself, claim your inheritance, you'll be going to the new world? What do you see? What comes when this word Golden Age comes up these days?
I don't really. Personally, I don't run with the kind of the pictorial kind of picture that we carry with, you know, with ourselves, but probably with the requirements that are probably there that are needed, that we need to be the embodiment of to actually to go there, to experience that particular world. So I tend to think about, am I meeting the criteria? And I feel this is, you know, that for myself, that this is my purpose of my incarnation is probably this, my primal aim and purpose of this birth is really the establishment of a golden age world, nothing else. And maybe that I'm trying to sort of get back on track to keep that as a focus of my life, not and nothing else.
How does that translate in your efforts or awareness, consciousness? What do you do to feel that this is moving forward and you're doing that?
It's kind of like having checks, you know, like not to lose that aim, but also not to become, I think, waylaid or trapped by kind of the illusions that happen within the BK world, you know, the illusions of, and we all experience it, I experience it, you know, the need for recognition, status, position. And of course, once we start to go down that kind of cul-de-sac, you know, that we start then, we start to lose the experience of true love. And the ability to be benevolent, to have acceptance, and of course, then there's no growth, there's no spiritual evolution, there's no subtlety, and this is a kind of checking I kind of at the moment I'm going through, just checking am I falling prey to these particular illusions.
Any special qualifications you feel we need to go to that new world? You were saying that you feel you're part of the establishment and wondering if you met the criteria. What would you think are the best criteria or the main ones for you that you want to really check and say, okay, I got that?
That's a good question. I don't know. You feel that you sometimes you feel that you're kind of this is what I need to focus on, and then you hear the next Aviat Merli and think, ah, that's the area I need to look at, and so on. You know, there's so many kind of pop-ups that come along, and you kind of you feel, oh, that's what I really need to refine. I really haven't really paid much attention. More, I should pay more attention to that. But for me personally, I think that there are kind of areas that Baba provides us with, you know, that these are the areas that if we focus on and we use them as the support structure of becoming subtle, maybe that's the area that I think for us as Brahmins is not to get caught up too much in the kind of physicality of the Brahman world, which is we so easily do. We're doing so much. But Baba provides us with sort of main areas that they're saying these are the areas that you'll become subtle, and these are the areas that will resolve and help you to move forward. You know, place. You know, of course, Amrit Vela. For me, it's always been since my beginning of my Brahmin life, which has been hammered into me. You know, since I entered the door by Danny Jenke, and as probably the most important part of my Brahmin life is Amrit Vela. And of course, as you begin to understand, it's an incredible process that enables you to become subtle. And of course, the offering of Bhog, you know, that I feel this is an immensely important part of our becoming. You know, that often there can be this kind of dismissal as a kind of, it's a ritual, it's from the East, it's just a process. But actually, behind the ritual is this aspect of becoming subtle, of moving into that subtle plane and relinquishing all the stuff that the world has heaped on us. And I think also the aspect of churning. I mean, Baba's always kind of intimating to it all the time, churn, churn. And that really makes our intellects light. It helps us to let go. And I think that this is the whole game. I don't know what you think about it yourself, but it's always just letting go. And then once we let go, we can then ascend, we can go into transcendence, we can become those subtle beings and experience that subtle light and that subtle energy. You look at it, it changes. I look at one thing and then it dissolves into something else. And then, you know, But at the moment, this is the area I'm kind of just focusing on.
So you would say that offering Bhog, Amritvela, churning, these are for you ways to lay the foundation of the Golden Age as well?
Yeah, I think I would like to be categorical because my take on it next week may change. But I feel that these are very important, you know, aspects. They're there. Let's go behind what the outward form of things and look at the significance, look at the depth, look at what the implications of these practices. I don't think Baba works on many levels, as we all know, and I think look at the deep significance of these particular structures that he's put in place. It's for us, they're incredible, you know, springs to take us very quickly into higher consciousness, into that subtle dimension, into the dimension, you know, into that golden age state that we're all striving for.
Do you wonder sometimes how it's going to really happen? We look at the world today, it's growing, we're over 7 billion. Many years ago, we were told that it wouldn't go past, I don't know, 4 billion, 5 billion, now we're past 7 billion. The world is in quite a big chaotic situation. It sounds like we heard the song, Heaven is coming, Heaven is coming, Heaven is coming, for a long, long, long time. It hasn't arrived yet. Do you question sometimes how this is going to happen and, you know, how are we going to be ready to move there? Is the Brahmins going to really finally get over their strange, you know, resistant sanskaras? What do you think? What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's. I think as things change in the Brahmin world, it's pretty chaotic. You know, as the world falls apart and all the structures fall apart, possibly the Brahmin world will fall apart. You know, in the sense of the initial structure, the scaff. Maybe the all the stuff that we put in place is just like a scaffold, and of course the scaffold is not the building. The scaffold is only the support, and possibly the scaffold that's been there, that's put in place, and we can see it's gradually falling apart. And then what are we left with? We're left with what we have, which is what Baba has given us, and then we have to then run with that. Yet if you're attached to the scaffold, you'll also fall with it. You'll also tumble back into the abyss, you know, this is. And I think it's that we have to hold on to that which Baba has given us, and we have to run with that. And it's like saying that we have to. The more that we are subtle, the more we're not part of it, because the superstructure of support, which is there, which a lot of the Brahma world is based upon, Baba talks about this term facilities, but it's actually, isn't it? It's all the things of the world, and that's their means of being a Brahmin, or their identity, and all the rest, all that stuff. Is connected still with the world. You know, this huge part of many souls of the BK inclination, they're still holding one part of the world as part of their spiritual journey. And of course, if you hold it, you're going to get pulled back into it. You're going to get sucked into the vortex. And I think more and more that we have to relinquish everything completely and experience this angelic consciousness, which is above, it's like being above it, and our world will be above it. Even everything is disintegrating, everything's imploding, everything is falling apart, and it will. And I think we have to be in this kind of this existence for us as subtle angels. How we manage and all the rest of it is we'll discover. But it's something like that, and I think this is more and more we have to have our foundation, our support, all things Baba.
Do you see this angelic consciousness coming up more and more within the Brahmins, at least within you or within a few others? Do you see this happening? Is that what can give us hope in terms of, you know, the process of moving to the next phase?
No, I don't see it actually. I don't.
So what's going to happen?
Among a few people, but
not. Something will have to trigger it.
Maybe the trigger will be something that will happen. You know, an implosion, something will happen that will wake people up. Will be something that will force many Brahmins. You know, there's also, you know, we know that trauma is an incredible trigger that wakes people up and causes realization. Possibly something like this will happen in the BK world that will bring a lot of people, because I still think, you know, that there's still such a reliance on the, you know, the physicality of the Brahman world, of doing and creating, and it's all out there. And I feel we're so still caught up with trying to change the world by doing and connecting and stuff. And I really feel that we've lost our kind of focus. Too busy running after the world, trying to sort of flag up attention. Look at us, listen to us. I really think our main focus should be about our own transformation, our own subtlety, and taking on board Baba's main message. And because the effects that we gain, Brahmas are doing this and that, and wonderful this, and we get recognition, and we get this, and we get platforms. And I think this is all illusionary, all very illusory, and taking us down false tracks. And it gives a signal. Maybe those guys that are involved in this maybe know what they're doing, but it gives a signal for others to do similar things. And it gives a message to them to be that. Oh, they are getting status, they're getting recognition, this is what I should do. You know, it's subtly, they start to do this, and it becomes, this is the, and the family is veering over to this kind of area. Well, it's always been veering over to this particular area. Well, I feel it. we should be sort of going lateral. We should be in ascendance. And I feel this is really what we're missing out, from my particular take on it. We really have to just let go of everything. And when we let go, you know, what happens is people will then be drawn to us. Then they'll say, look at these wonderful people. Where are you going? How did you get there? Rather than us running after them, saying, look at us.
Well, that's great. I mean, I appreciate your honesty and, you know, clarity about the fact we can't just live in a fantasy world and hope that Disney World would transform into Golden Age, right? It has to be a little bit more realistic. Let me ask you a quick little question before we go into a little meditation with you. I'm talking to you as an expert in humor. You've made us laugh for many, many years. Would there be humor in Golden Age? Will there be any room for having a good joke and a good, good entertaining moment? Or how do you see your humor going to have to evolve in the next world?
I've never thought about that, tell you the truth. I really never thought about that. That's a good, very good question, Eric, actually. Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of laughter, and there'll be a lot of, I think the communication will be about looking how things are and pointing out the connectedness of things and relating things and just seeing, not the incongruousness of things, because in essentially everything is in harmony, of course, but somehow maybe we'll laugh together at things. It'll be a different laughter, of course, maybe about just how the beauty of things or how things are or two things together or something, and it's like a just pointing out things, but, and we'll laugh in a sense of appreciation of the circumstances that we find ourselves in. I think everyone will have a natural humour. You know, I think one of the effects of Kali Yuga is, of course, is that we can't laugh, isn't it? It's a karma that we can't open up our joy. We can't see the, and we can't sort of laugh at ourselves because it hurts too much. And I think so. This is what's been lost. And I think maybe my type of humour is maybe just it is definitely a Kali Yuga humour. but I think it'll transform into something of just laughing at. Expressing the wonder and the beauty of what we have.
Well, certainly look forward to to have that humor with you, and I hope we'll have more than just a little smile on a permanent basis for, 2,500 years that will not allow us to show our teeth. So hopefully we'll smile a little bigger than that. Anyway, Jim, it's wonderful to listen to you. And how about we conclude this time spent with you with 3-4 minutes of just a reflection? If you could just share some of your thoughts in a form of kind of a meditation commentary for 3 minutes and see where we go. You seem to really be interested in the subtlety of the New Age. So why don't we go into a subtle moment with you for a few minutes?
Yeah, this is a short little meditation. And it's focused on actually the angelic mind, and which is, I think, is another, it's a euphemism for the divine mind, the golden age of mind. It's a kind of, it's probably a prelude to the divine mind, but it's part of that. An angelic mind is free, detached, aligned with truth. It moves between the inner and outer worlds. Is a mind free of the need for acknowledgement, praise, or the garlands of success. A mind subtle and light, carefree and content. A mind not drawn or trapped by form or role, nor influenced or deceived by the wonders of the technocratic worlds. There's a heart full of happiness, enthusiasm and joy. An angelic mind is a messenger, a spiritual go-between, an ambassador of eternal truth, and an outreach arm of God's pure thought. It is an embodiment of spiritual power, an icon enshrined in all beliefs. It is the returning image, a long-lost dream, wonderful and beautiful. It is an image of ourselves.
Shanti. Wow, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. It's beautiful inspiration, subtle, and yes, you got us. We're ready. We follow you, Jim. Whenever you want to go to nature, we'll follow you. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate sharing your thoughts so honestly, and look forward to seeing you very soon. So a big, big Om Shanti to you, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Great pleasure to be part of your beautiful project. Thank you.